Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Welcome to the Peter King Podcast, where I try to tell you a little bit about the world of the NFL, and then a little bit about the world. But mostly this week, it's going to be about the world of the NFL, because there's a lot going on in the NFL. I'm going to preview the NFL owners' meetings in Phoenix, starting on Sunday, with Judy Batista of NFL Network, who has been on top of a lot of the rules changes that are possible coming up this year in the National Football League. And we'll also be joined by Mike Garofolo of NFL Network. And I wanted to have Mike on this week to discuss some great reporting he did on the Odell Beckham trade from the Giants to the Browns. And also just about, you know, I'm fascinated with stuff like this because I'm a little bit of a news nerd. I want to find out how a story like this happens. With Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport, Jay Glazer kind of ruling the roost, Chris Mortensen and a few others, how does a new kid on the block get maybe the story of the spring in the NFL? And we'll talk a little bit to Mike about that. But first, I want to talk to you about one thing. We're going to get into this with Judy Batista a little bit, but it's something that is a particular pet peeve of mine. And that is the overtime rules in the National Football League. There's 100 things we could talk about this week, but I just simply want to set the stage for something that probably is going to fail in Phoenix when the NFL meets. And again, I'll talk to Judy about this and get her opinion about this also. But something that's probably going to fail in Phoenix is a rules change proposal that Andy Reid of the Kansas City Chiefs is very, very interested in. And that the owner of the Chiefs, Clark Hunt, also is interested in. They say it's out of a sense of fair play, and how they believe that the game should be equalized in overtime. Now, let's just say what the rule is now. As of now, in overtime in the regular season, the NFL has shortened the overtime period to 10 minutes, and the team that wins the coin flip in overtime must score a touchdown on that first possession for the game to be over. If there's any other score at that point, the game continues with the opposing team getting a possession. So in other words, if there's a field goal on the first possession, the opposing team will get a possession. But if there's a touchdown, game over. And so over the last few years, I think when people have argued about what's important about overtime, I think people basically have said that, you know, the NFLPA, the union involved, basically has been very, very adamant that they don't want many more plays added on to games because those are plays where their union members have more of a chance to get injured. Understandable. And if there's so much argument about, you know, how dangerous an 18-game season would be, you hardly want players, you know, playing another 50 plays, say, in an extra quarter of play, which potentially, that's probably a little much, but maybe 40. So I understand where the union is coming from. My point is that when it comes to the playoffs, I think, and I'll raise this issue with Judy, I think in the playoffs, the most important thing is to see that the best team wins and the most deserving team wins. And obviously, I think that the equitable thing would be to make sure that both teams get at least one possession in an overtime period. I know most people, and Judy, rightfully so, has reported this often, and we'll discuss this coming up. But most people will say, "Well, hey, if you want to win the game, you got to play defense, stop them on the first possession, and then you just get a field goal or touchdown, and you win." And I get it, and that's a logical argument. I got it. But when you're playing against a team that has an otherworldly quarterback, and in the AFC Championship game this year, when the New England Patriots took the ball in overtime, won the coin flip, took the ball, went the length of the field, and scored a touchdown to win the game, and the Chiefs never scored, you know, the most electrifying player in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes, stood there on the sidelines for 19 minutes, in real clock time, watching Tom Brady go the length of the field and score and never got off the sideline. And you can say, well, okay, his team didn't play defense. I would be saying the exact same thing if the Chiefs won the coin flip, Mahomes took him 80 yards, and he had been shredding the Patriots in the fourth quarter. Mahomes took the ball down the field, and I believe he would have scored on his first possession, scored a touchdown also. Maybe he would, maybe he wouldn't. We could argue about that all day. The point is, you've got two quarterbacks who you watch them right now and you say these are going to be two all-timers if Patrick Mahomes doesn't get injured. Already you got maybe the best quarterback of all time, so in Tom Brady, and you've got him playing the MVP of this football season, and only one of them touched the ball in overtime. I don't like that. I think that the equitable way to go is to give both teams in the playoffs. I will hand this one to the Union for the regular season and say that, okay, it shouldn't be mandated during the regular season that both teams get a possession. I believe it should be mandated in the postseason when the games are at their most important that each team get a possession and the game doesn't come down to tremendous importance of something as capricious as a coin flip. And now my conversation with Judy Batista of NFL Network. Back on the Peter King podcast, so happy to be joined by longtime NFL writer, broadcaster now, Judy Batista of NFL.com, NFL Network, formerly covered the National Football League for the New York Times. Judy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Peter. Good to be here.
So, Judy, we head into the league meetings starting this weekend. We record this late on a Tuesday afternoon, but we head into the league meetings starting this weekend. And one of the things I think we're all curious to know, and it's hard to know basically four or five days beforehand, because the competition committee is still sort of jousting with the issues about replay and about what might be eligible, what won't be eligible. But can you sort of frame the discussion going into Phoenix that the 32 NFL owners, coaches, and front offices are going to have to deal with as they prepare to perhaps change the replay system so that plays like the one that happened in the NFC Championship game, where there was an obvious pass interference call and helmet-to-helmet contact in that play. Tell me what the NFL could do, might do, and sort of how you think the table is being set to try to address that play and other issues coming into the league meetings.
Okay, so let's take a step back to the scouting combine, which was a few weeks ago in Indianapolis. The competition committee, as you know, meets there. They meet with coaches and general managers and some players as well. They meet there, sort of go over the controversial plays of the season, things that need to be addressed. And, of course, this was the big one. Troy Vincent, who the top league executive overseeing football operations, said that play took the air out of the season. They had this great, exciting, competitive season, and then that play happened. And it has, frankly, overshadowed everything that has happened since, including the Super Bowl. The competition committee went into the scouting combine not sounding very optimistic that anything would change. They thought there was not really much momentum to change, to do a real overhaul of replay. They came out of it, though, after meeting with coaches and general managers, investigating what they call the sky judge option. And what the sky judge would be an eighth member of the officiating crew, up in the box, not on the field, up in the box, and he or she would have limited scope. He or she would be able to overturn egregious mistakes or egregious non-calls, like we saw in the NFC Championship game, but only during certain periods. Now, this was what they left Indianapolis with. The mandate was, think about this, look at this, what could we do? So it would be during limited times in the game, so maybe the last 2 minutes of each half, for example. And it would only be a limited number of plays, too. So then you'd have to determine which plays, right? Pass interference, helmet-to-helmet contact, you know, any sort of personal fouls. So it would be very limited in scope, very limited in time, but that's the idea that they were charged with thinking about and sort of noodling over, and as you said, jousting. They're already in Arizona. They're jousting. So we don't quite know what that rule proposal might look like, if it's even going to get to the point of a proposal. But that was the idea that they had sort of focused on as they left Indianapolis. So that's what we're anticipating when we get to Arizona, that they're going to spend their time looking at.
Two things I would ask you from covering a lot of the competition committee stuff over the years. Let's take them one at a time. This is what I've found, and I want to ask you if you've found this. When Roger Goodell wants something done, there's not going to be a headline where it says, Goodell tells competition committee to fix this blight on the game. There's not going to be that headline. There's going to be a little sidling situation a little conversation at one of those meetings where Roger Goodell says, listen, we had an incredible amount of focus, and rightfully so, on a terrible non-call that might have determined the wrong team, might have meant that the wrong team went to the Super Bowl from the NFC. That can't happen again. Fix it. You know, walk out of the room. So, first of all, Roger Goodell doesn't have a vote. He doesn't have a vote on the competition committee. There are eight NFL people on it, you know, front office people and coaches, GMs, all that. So he doesn't have a vote, but he has tremendous influence. And I want you to tell me how you think, if at all, this influence plays into it.
Well, I was struck, I don't know if you were, but at the Super Bowl, when he does his annual State of the League address, I was struck by the fact that Roger did not issue any sort of mandate. He has done that in the past. If you remember, in previous years, he at one of those press conferences, he said something like, we've got to fix the catch rule, which was basically right. What you were saying. That was basically the instruction to the, you know, he was saying it from the podium, competition committee, get to work on the catch rule. He didn't do that this time. He left it wide open. He sort of said, look, you know, this is human error. This is a game officiated by humans. It's played and coached by human beings. We, you know, human beings make mistakes, and sometimes it's just a mistake. So I thought he left the door wide open for anything or for nothing. But I did think when Troy Vincent, you know, met with a few of us in Indianapolis at the end of the competition committee meetings, and he admitted that it had taken the air out of this, you know, out of this great season, that, you know, it had sort of dominated the conversation then. I thought that, you know, was sort of the unspoken signal that the league office was concerned about it, that they knew it was a problem and that they had to do something. They had to figure out a way. As you said, this can't happen again. Like, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to go to the proposal where you make everything reviewable, but you have to have a mechanism where the egregious mistakes can be addressed immediately. You just can't have an egregious mistake like that determining who goes to the Super Bowl. I sort of compare it to, remember when they changed, you know, they changed the overtime rule where you couldn't just win. If you got possession in overtime, you couldn't just win with a field goal, right? You could only end overtime immediately with a touchdown. They did that because they were concerned that kickers were getting so good, so accurate and so strong that we might get to a Super Bowl where it would go to overtime and a coin flip, you know, and then a team would get just need one first down, for instance, and a kicker could boot a 60-yard field goal, and that would be the end of the Super Bowl. They didn't want a Super Bowl determined like that. Well, in this case, we might have had one of the teams in the Super Bowl determined by a terrible mistake and something that, you know, I think they feel they've got to figure out a way to address it. Here's something that could happen, though, when we get to Arizona. There's a lot of moving parts to a sky judge kind of thing. They could easily table it. They could have a, you know, a robust conversation in the room, raise all kinds of concerns, and then table it until the May meeting when the owners gather in Key Biscayne. You know, and that would give them a, you know, a few more weeks there than to.
You're right about that, Judy. I guess I'd make two points. One of the members of the competition committee in Indianapolis told me point blank, quote, "Roger will not let us get out of Phoenix without making a change," end quote. Right. And yes, in the past, the fail safe has always been the May meetings. And I'm not saying that it's impossible or that it might not happen. It could very well happen. The one thing I keep thinking of is, let's say that they do it at these May meetings. It gives the NFL not a lot of time, you know, before their officials gather in Dallas, I think in like mid-July, to frame exactly how they're going to do this. And for some, if they have a sky judge, if they add an extra official, the sky judge, to let people know, basically would be a permanent, a year-long addition to every crew. That crew member would basically be the eighth official on the crew and would travel with them, would be the same person every week. And you know what I heard that I think is really interesting about this? That one of the problems, and that one of the things they're actually looking into right now, is do they have enough people? Do they have enough people for the 17? They'd have to find 17 extra officials to do something that has never been done before.
Yeah, Troy Vincent made that point when he met with us in Indianapolis that, let's face it, that person's going to have a lot of power, and for several minutes of the game will have more power than anybody else on the officiating crew, right? Because he or she could overturn these big consequential plays. So that you want.
Which is why, Judy, you know what I said when I heard this? You know what I said when I heard this? So, okay, so six years ago, I did a week in the life of an officiating crew. I wrote this long story, and basically I hung around with Gene Steratore's officiating crew for the year, or for a week. And I remember thinking the back judge was a young back judge, a star named Dino Paganelli. And he was so terrific and so he's totally on top of his game, great student of the game. And when this first happened, when they start talking about the sky judge, I said, you know, honestly, the sky judge could well be more influential on the course of a game than anybody except the referee on the field. You know, he's going to be more, you know, than he'd be. The sky judge could be more important than the down judge or the back judge who's calling interference and all that. So maybe you take some of your best officials and you make them sky judges, and then you move some of the top college officials into their jobs for the year.
Yes, that is one of the big concerns about this, is where are you getting these, what you want to be, very experienced, very knowledgeable officials? Because for a few minutes of the game, however many minutes they're going to have purview, they're the most important member, right? They can overrule the official on the field. So the head referee on the field. So, you know, that is going to be a critical part of what they were sent home with. You know, their homework coming out of the combine was, you know, where would you get these guys from? How many minutes of the game would you have them in charge, you know, and what kind of plays? So, again, they're still sort of sorting all that out. I'm curious to see. I wouldn't be surprised if what happens, as you just said about not tabling it, is what they did last year with the helmet rule. Remember, they basically threw that together in the meeting room
while
we were at the annual meeting in Florida. They voted on it, yes. Okay, we've got this helmet rule. And then they basically told them, okay, figure out the details.
Yeah, they invented a rule around it. Around it, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
They basically sort of did this broad framework of a rule, and then they said, okay, fill in the details by the time we get to May, and then at the May meeting they, you know, affirmed their vote. But, you know, I agree with you. I'd be shocked if they leave Phoenix without something to address it.
Judy, let's address two other issues going into Phoenix. One will be any other rules changes that could happen, might happen. And I think a lot of people are curious about whether the AFC divisional playoff game, or I'm sorry, the AFC championship game, excuse me, New England and Kansas City might prompt the Kansas City rule proposal by Andy Reid, Clark Hunt of the Kansas City Chiefs, that in overtime, both teams be mandated to get at least one possession. Do you sense any momentum for that?
No. The response that I have heard from people is you can play defense. You're allowed to play defense. Play defense, and you'll get the ball. No, I don't think. And the other thing, don't forget, that they want to, first of all, limit the time of a game, and they want to limit the number of plays in a game because the more plays, the more risk of injury. So that would add plays, and I don't think that they're going to backtrack on that.
Agree with you, but I always say to people, and it's an endless argument, it's totally a chase your tail argument, but you tell me if the New England Patriots had lost the coin flip in overtime, if the Kansas City Chiefs won the coin flip, you know, in overtime, how many times out of 100 would they have said, well, we'll play defense first? Zero. How many times with the New England Patriots? Maybe 5 out of 100, but never against Patrick Mahomes. And so to me, I understand that everybody says play defense, but in reality, the coin flip in the AFC championship game had a huge part to, had a huge say in what team won that game. And that's why I don't like it. I think both teams should get a possession. Now, I will say this. During the season, I understand the NFLPA and the NFL are all about player safety. I think when a Super Bowl berth is on the line, I want both teams to have an equitable shot in overtime. That would be what I would say. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all your profits. Plus, Robinhood has no minimum account deposit, so you don't have any minimum that you need to get started. You can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and for experts alike. You can view easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the markets as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements, you'll never miss the right moment to invest using Robinhood. And right now, Robinhood is giving listeners of the Peter King Podcast a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up today at peterking.robinhood.com. Again, peterking.robinhood.com. Judy, I want to ask you before we go out about the Pittsburgh Steelers. In Phoenix next
nothing
week.
Nothing to talk about there.
Yeah, nothing to see here. In Phoenix next week, Mike Tomlin will meet the media for the first time since this gigantic debacle took place. Almost all the Antonio Brown stuff. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and you please correct me, that Mike Tomlin, who did not meet and usually does not meet the media at the scouting combine, now has gone the month of January, the month of February, and basically almost all of March without talking to the city of Pittsburgh about what just happened with Antonio Brown. So I wonder, what are the permanent scars on the Steelers left by this, and how do you think they rebound from it this year?
Well, I don't know if any of the scars are permanent. I think they've taken some dings. There's no question about it. And certainly, you know, on the field, I mean, we're going to see how it rebounds, but it's awfully tough when you lose two talents like that back to back. Look, I think probably Tomlin's reputation for being so good at managing players has taken a hit, right? I mean, I think, you know, we're all, especially in the Antonio Brown thing, I think everybody is wondering how could this have gone so dramatically off the rails the way it did. Now, was Mike Tomlin keeping a lid on all of this kind of stuff all along? Maybe. And then it finally blew. Maybe that's what was happening. But I do think, you know, certainly from the outside, I'm looking at, like, how could it possibly have blown up like this? Now, I am not in the camp that places all the blame on Mike Tomlin. Ultimately, Antonio Brown walked away from the team before the most important game of the season. That's on him. I don't care how mad he was at Ben Roethlisberger. I don't care. You know, he walked away from the team. But it does make me wonder if perhaps all along it had not been, you know, made clear by management what they expected Antonio Brown to do. And so he thought that this was okay to walk away from the team and that he'd be able to walk back to the team the day before the game. So I think Tomlin's reputation probably takes a little ding. I'm not sure any of this is permanent. If the Steelers, you know, rebound and, you know, manage to have a decent season this year and go to the playoffs, which admittedly is a lot tougher when you don't have an Antonio Brown and a Le'Veon Bell on the field. But if they manage to do it, I don't know. I don't know if anything is permanent in the NFL. We think things are permanent in the NFL, and then nothing's permanent.
Yeah, I don't think anything is permanent per se, but they better play well this year. I think.
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
You know, they go 6-10, 7-9, and there's a lot of guff in the locker room. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be good for Tom. I don't think it's going to be good for anybody. But
right.
It's very un-Pittsburgh, that's all.
Very un-Pittsburgh to have. I know they don't like the word drama. I know they keep saying there's not really any drama, but it's very unlike the Steelers to have this kind of, you know, strange off-the-field stuff going on. You just don't see this kind of thing. Now, we've all lumped it together. I mean, the Le'Veon Bell thing, I think, was a straight contract thing.
Right.
You know, the Antonio Brown thing was a separate issue. But, you know, to have two things back-to-back, you know, in consecutive off seasons is very unusual for the Steelers, who are, you know, a button-down, as you know, like, franchise. They treat their players well. It's very strange to see this. And I am as curious as anybody to see how the team performs this year. But, look, you know, I think if they make it to the playoffs next year, all's forgotten.
Judy Batiste, NFL Network, NFL.com. Much, much appreciated the briefing on what people are going to be reading about starting this weekend and watching from Phoenix with the annual NFL meetings next week. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Peter. See you there.
Taming the Briar Patch. Mowing the lawn, trimming Yeti, whatever you call it, it's about time we talk about manscaping. And let me tell you something. You will not want to see me without a shirt on. I am a gigantic brown bear, and I need to be manscaped desperately. So what do you think happened the other day when I'm sitting at home at my nice apartment in New York, and I get a box in the mail, and I said, what is this box? And I open up the box, and here it is. Manscaped saved me. I'm now not going to look like an unruly brown bear out in the forest with leaves getting stuck to my hair. Anyway, enough of the grotesque chatter. Manscaped, this is going to be the last ad they ever run on this podcast. Anyway, so, I mean, we all manscape. I mean, we all want a little bit less hair. We want to keep things trimmed, and we want to keep things fresh everywhere. including below the waist. 9 out of 10 women of all ages prefer their guy Manscaped. But you gotta have the right tools for the jewels, or you'll look like you used a machete. Now, did I ever think that I would say those words on radio or on a podcast or on television, or that I would write those words? I mean, this is some revolutionary podcasting right here. Anyway, pop over to manscaped.com and check out their perfect package. Not that perfect package, but the Manscaped Perfect Package 2.0. That was a smash hit on Shark Tank. You might have seen it. It features the lawnmower, a precision trimmer engineered for below-the-waist grooming. The skin-safe technology means no more accidental nicks and burns. Check out the lawnmower and the amazing grooming and hygiene products that come with your perfect package. What's that saying? Trim the shrubs and the tree stands taller? Actually, I never heard that before, but it makes a little sense. Anyway, get 20% off plus free shipping today. Visit manscaped.com and use promo code KING. Again, use promo code KING at manscaped.com. And I'm going to spell that manscaped.com. Manscaped.com, promo code KING. Now my conversation with Mike Garofalo of NFL Network. Back on the Peter King podcast, very happy to be joined by Mike Garofalo, reporter for the NFL Network. Mike burst onto your television screens at 7:56 p.m. one day last week with the startling slash not so startling news that the New York Giants had traded Odell Beckham Jr. to the Cleveland Browns. Mike, I first want you to tell America, the Americans who did not see this, what you had to say at the end of your tweet when you broke this story.
It's the one piece I actually kind of sort of regret a little bit. I mean, it just...
I don't think you should.
The last line was, I'm not joking, or I'm not kidding.
You say, I'm not joking.
what I meant to say was, this is not a fake account or whatever, because you know the way Twitter is these days. Everybody's making themselves... So that was the gist of that. I didn't mean to, like, you know, spike the ball or anything like that, but I knew, and I had people text me. I clicked on your handle to make sure. Yep, it's him. It's definitely him. I saw the blue check, and I've done that too. When Schefter's dropped some big ones, usually when it's my colleagues Ian Rappaport or Tom Pelissero, I kind of know it's coming, so I know it's legit. But I've done that for some other folks when they drop. You click on it and say, okay, no, there's the check. Wait a minute, am I sort of being fooled? But listen, honestly, Peter, I sat there for 10 seconds after I got off the phone with my last source that I felt good about, you know, where we are here, and hung up the phone and said, okay, was I really talking to who I was talking to? Did I really hear it correctly? And I said, look, once I hit this, I could have had John Gorsey on my left and Dave Gettleman on my right and helping me press the tweet button. I still would have had that moment of panic because, you know, it was a big one.
Mike, for those who are not in this business and maybe they might be just curious about this, I always think it's very interesting. You're in a business right now where sort of, I would say, the kingpins of the football information business are Schefter, Glazer, Rappaport, and there are others, Mort, mm-hmm. obviously. But you're basically, you know, competing, Schefter, Rappaport, on those kind of things. And obviously, they're going to get the vast majority of them. They just have mm-hmm. such an investment in it. But without giving away the company store, which of course you would not do, I want you to tell me how you won this story and what is behind this, and how many years does it take in your mind to be able to do something like this? I'd love journalism students to hear what exactly it takes in a business where, you know, Adam Schefter is to me kind of on, you know, on these quickie things around this time of year is kind of on Mount Olympus, and Ian Rappaport is right near him. What does it take to get that story?
It's got to be in your wheelhouse. I think number one, and I get what you're saying. And listen, part of, I love the versatility of what the NFL Network has afforded me, as far as, you know, I'm in studio hosting a show on the weekend, during the season, Good Morning Football Weekend. When Ian's off, I fill in for him as the insider. When we're all on during free agency, we're all popping things here and there. Then I'm going to be in the field a couple of days later reporting on a practice or a press conference or coming up for the draft. Those guys are looking at the volume of things. I'm really, okay, if I get a couple of big ones and, you know, I hit the ones that are in my wheelhouse. So I truly do believe that with the Giants and the Browns, I have a lot of people that I've worked with for a long time. I covered the Giants.
To let you know, you covered the Giants for the Star Ledger for how long?
2004 when Coughlin and Eli came in to 2011 when they won their second Super Bowl. So, and not to say that, you know, for that entire time, everybody in that building always thought great things about me. I mean, when you cover a team, you're going to have your ups and downs, and we butted heads a lot with sources inside that building. And then there were times where, you know, the sources inside that building said to me, "Hey, I thought you did a really nice job on X." And so over time, I feel like, you know, you're able to build up that rapport, and I believe that the people that I spoke to, I know that the people that I spoke to that night, understood the significance of what was going out and who was going to be able to break that news and carry it to the public. And I probably cashed in a lot of chips with a lot of people.
Can I just tell you this? There have been times in my past life where I did some of the things that you are doing now. And there were times when I quite literally would say to someone, "I really want this story.
Yeah.
I want this story. And it's important to me. And don't do me any favors, but don't undercut me either." So explain how exactly that works when you're working on a story of immense currency in the information business.
Yeah, I didn't go that route on this one, which was odd. I just, all along, I kept checking in, and I feel like some folks were throwing some things out with regard to Beckham and the Giants for go back to last year. And unless I was extremely comfortable with everything I was saying and I got a lot of people to sign off on it, or the right people to sign off on it, I really didn't go with it. So if you look back at the volume of things that I said on Beckham, going back to last year when the Rams were involved and talking to the Giants about a trade, it was probably low volume because I probably sat on a number of things just because, you know what, I'm not quite comfortable with this, or somebody is telling me that I'm wrong, so you know what, I'm going to hold it back. I remember specifically at one point last year, I thought it was going to happen. And I checked in and somebody said, you know, back off the gas here, relax. It's just, you know, part of the process. And so I did, and maybe that in the long run helped me. I don't know. I was not given a reason why, other than one of the people who helped me said, you know, look, respect the work that you do, have always done that, or have always thought that way about what you do. And I'm going to help you out on this one, blah, blah, blah. I don't know the full answer, maybe.
Chronologically, you know, I wrote a little bit in my column this week about this, essentially that John Dorsey called Dave Gettleman on Tuesday morning. Dave Gettleman, the Giants general manager, under tremendous heat in New York right now, still a week after the trade, as we record this late on a Tuesday afternoon. Dave Gettleman still under a lot of heat. Dave Gettleman treated this a little bit like the way Ernie Accorsi treated the Eli Manning trade in 2004. He was not picking up the phone to call the San Diego Chargers during the pick. when the New York Giants were on the board with the fourth pick in the draft, he wasn't picking up the phone to call, because once he did that, he knew the pick was going to be tremendously devalued because you're chasing a trade, not somebody coming to chase you with the trade. Now, I'm not positive that that really has tremendous value here, the more I think about it, but that's the way he treated it. Dorsey calls him on Tuesday morning. And what I reported is that there were about 12 offers back and forth, and that it didn't get real until the Browns agreed to put Jabril Peppers in the trade. In terms of the anatomy of the trade, tell me what you understand.
Yeah, and I thought you had a key point in there about how the Giants called the Bills after the Antonio Brown thing crumbled on Buffalo's end, which allowed word to get out. See, that was also part of it. Maybe your journalism students listening to this should note this. You know, this didn't come by someone in the Giants or Browns building calling me and saying, hey, we're making a trade. It was word was getting around the league, and I was able to kind of triangulate all that stuff and say, you know what, this one. And I even said to Kimberly Jones about 2 hours before the trade broke, I said, I don't know, Kim, this one feels a little different. This one feels like we're not getting the same replies to this one. It seems like, and this is the other part of it, you know, all the things we had said were that the Giants weren't, quote, shopping Beckham, that they were listening. They did clearly take an active role in calling Buffalo. Now, you could say they were calling Buffalo and saying, okay, our price is still sky high, so we're not, quote, shopping him.
In my opinion, let me interject. I think the phone call to Buffalo was Dave Gettleman, former Carolina GM, working with Brandon Bean, his former lieutenant, for a short period of time, but still in Carolina before he went to Buffalo as the GM. So they're very close. And it's basically Dave Gettleman saying, and I'm inventing this, hey, you're going after Antonio Brown. What about Odell? Why haven't you called me about Odell? I don't think it was that make me an offer for Odell. It was, hey, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. We got somebody out here, too, who's younger and who's probably not as much of a problem child as the other guy.
Yeah, and you wonder if that was also a smoke signal to somebody else, and if, you know, based on your reporting, that seems like, whether intentionally or unintentionally, that's how it happened, because that got Dorsey involved, Peter. The Jabril Peppers part is interesting, and I tried to, in the wake of the trade, push that to some Giants folks, or at least put that part out there, that it was an important part of the trade for the Giants. They were not having it, because, you know, they love flash and sizzle and offense, and they were saying, what did we just do? We just traded away one of the best offensive players in the league. But I can also add this here, and maybe I haven't made a point of it on the air. There were folks in Cleveland who were upset that they lost Peppers, and those folks are on the defensive side of the ball,
right?
Because to them, he was a guy that can cover the slot, and he can do stuff as a safety as well. You get back in cover, get down in the box, do a little bit of everything. So they felt like he was kind of two players in one for them, and now they're a little shorthanded on defense, and they're going to have to score a little more on offense maybe to overcome that. But it was clearly a key part for the Giants, who felt like he represented one of the two first-round picks that they wanted to get back, because he was a first-round pick, and they feel like this is the kind of player that they would get.
My argument on that one, Mike, is that he's a 25th pick in the draft in 2017. He's had two, I would say, good to slightly above average years. They may think that he can cover in the slot and that he is okay in coverage, but his statistics, woeful statistics against the pass, would suggest otherwise, and who knows? That could be a work in progress. We'll see. We'll see. But my only argument, and I got a call from somebody who was not pleased that I said the Giants got 80% value for Beckham, you know, because I said I don't view, you know, right. You could not right now go out and trade Jabril Peppers for a first round pick, I bet, to any but maybe one or two or three teams in the NFL. So I don't view him right now as a first round pick. That's not first round value. But anyway, my one other question about this before we get to two other things is, you're a guy who's around the Giants all the time. You know the team very well. You know the front office very well. You know the inner workings of this team very, very well. If I had asked you before all this would happen, if I had asked you, Mike, tough call, if it's up to you, do you think the Giants can live with Beckham, should live with Beckham, or is it just smarter to make a clean break and let Pat Shurmur have a clean team?
I think they're, and this is part of what part of the discussion I've had, because one of the things that I've relayed is there are a lot of people in that building that think that they run a better operation on offense without Odell Beckham. Not that they're better, but that he is this presence there that's Mark Ross, the former director of college scouting for the Giants, was actually on our air this last week, and one of the things he said was, even on the good days, Odell is a distraction. Some folks kind of feel like that inside that building. He is one of the best players in the NFL, though. One of the best players, not just receivers, best players. So I would say, you know, try to live with it, move past it. I understand why, or their thought process. I don't necessarily agree with it. I also think, Peter, nobody really has explicitly stated this to me, but I believe this to be the case. Saquon Barkley's thing is positive, positive, positive. Odell Beckham's thing a lot of times is negative, negative, negative. And so they said, you know what, if we can get the right price, we can move this negativity out of the building and let positivity take over.
Support for the Peter King Podcast comes from Wix.com. With Wix, you can create your very own professional website. Choose a template you love and customize it by adding your own text, images, and videos. With hundreds of intuitive design features, you can tell your story exactly the way you want. Want even more for your website? You can easily start a blog, launch an online store, or create an event. Share everything in a click on social media and drive even more traffic to your site with SEO tools to get found on Google. Wix has all the tools you need to create the exact website you want. You can even create a beautiful website while listening to this podcast. Over 140 million people choose Wix to create their website, so create yours today. Get started now by going to Wix.com. That's Wix.com/Peter King to get 10% off. Again, Wix.com/Peter King. You'll be glad you did. One other Giants question for those who love Big Blue.
Mm-hmm.
Sixth pick in the draft. Do you believe they'll be in play for Dwayne Haskins at quarterback? Or do you think that this general manager is determined to build both lines and get his quarterback next year?
I think they're eyeing quarterback here, and if it falls right, and I also believe, I don't think that it's a lock that they stay at six. Now, would they package 6 and 17 together? I don't believe so, just based on what I'm hearing from Dave Gettleman about the value of multiple picks, including multiple first-round picks. So I don't see him going from 2 to 1 again, but maybe he takes that 6 along with another pick and slides up a couple. I think it's very much in flux, because at 6, they don't control a lot of things. There's a lot that could happen in front of them, including teams jumping them. And Gettleman's the kind of guy where he can look at it and say, you know what, if somebody's coming up to get Kyler Murray and jumping us to get Haskins, and all of a sudden the defensive players are falling, screw it, we'll take a defensive player, and we'll get better from an edge rusher standpoint or whatever they see there, whether it's Quinnen Williams or whatever. I'm just throwing out names at this point, but you just get the way that Gettleman's whole thing is value, value, value. So I don't think it's a lock they take a quarterback, but they've got their eyes on them.
I like what he thinks about value, 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 but this is a team that has waited an interminable amount of time to get a quarterback of the future. And if they win 6 games this year somehow, which I don't see, but if they win 6 games this year and end up drafting 10th or whatever, and there's no way they'll be able to get Justin Herbert or whoever the big star next year is, you know, this team has got to stop putting off going to get its quarterback, period. And so I understand we're going to go for value, but You know, under that case, you know, Eli Manning is going to be suiting up with a cane in 11 years, and he's still going to be the guy. Mike, we're going to finish, and I'm going to ask you about a story that you're in the process of doing. I want you to explain to America who Cousin Daniels is.
Yeah, Cousin Daniels, University
Sorry,
of
Charleston. Sorry, mispronounced.
You're good, you're good. And one of the things I mentioned earlier, Peter, I love the fact that the NFL Network lets me do different things and we've got different avenues because all we do is football, so we've got a lot of ways to get the info out. I was able to do a feature that's going to run in the next month before the draft on Cousin. I love also, Peter, the NFL draft because we spend so much time talking about the guys at the top of the draft, but there's great stories throughout, and Daniel's story, is that he played at Charleston as a defensive end. He was a D1 talent coming out of high school, but a couple of offers fell through. He had to go to prep school as well, so he played on the D2 level. He had 30
this is University of Charleston in West Virginia, right?
In West Virginia,
a pass
not
rusher.
The Charleston, right. Yeah. Not the Charleston in South Carolina. He's got really good athletic ability, and he played 4 years, and he blew the school sack record out of the water. There's also another guy on the defensive line, John Kaminsky, that's going to get drafted ahead of him, so he got a lot of the attention. But Daniels had production. He played his entire four-year career, Peter. I'm telling you, a handful of people at most knew that he was completely blind in one eye. He had an accident when he was a kid, about 5 years old, rode his scooter into a pole that was sticking out from an abandoned building. He never saw it, hit a direct shot, and you would never know from the film. I mean, we've got plays that we broke down with the defensive line coach where he's got his back to the quarterback, he can't see anything, and he's making plays because he's just got a great feel. So he may or may not get drafted. He didn't really work out well at his pro days. But Peter, the stuff that we got on film, and here's where I'm really proud of the story. I wrote a story on him for .com back in February. Since then, there's a woman in Charleston who had just gotten the news that her son is potentially going blind in one eye. He's having issues, maybe in both eyes. He's got a condition. I don't remember the name of it. It's a long name. She was distraught. And because of the story that I wrote, someone pointed it to her, and she got this sense of hope that my son's life is not over and he can still play sports and still do great things. We brought them together yesterday, Peter, in Charleston at the kids' elementary school. We got it all on tape. It was a phenomenal, powerful moment and day. So I'm really proud of this story that should be hitting in the next couple of weeks here.
Here's what we'll do. You tell me when that is going to be on the air. Mm-hmm. I'll put a note in my column on the Monday before then, and then I'll tweet it out because people absolutely should see this story.
Thank you, Peter. I appreciate that. And we had our A team on this story. Trent Cooper, one of our eight producers, and these kids that were this camera crew. These kids were like 23 years old and just incredibly talented USC film school graduates. I mean, they really spared no expense in getting us everything we needed for this story. It's going to look great. It's going to be a great story. And hopefully, you know, the kid makes some noise in the league at the next level and we look smart, you know?
Mike Garofolo, NFL Network, really appreciate you briefing us on Odell and telling us about a cool story coming up.
Awesome. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks to my guests, both from NFL Network, Judy Batista and Mike Garofolo. If you enjoyed these conversations, be sure to listen and subscribe to other great episodes in my podcast series, such as my conversations with Tom Brady, Julian Edelman, and Roger Goodell. You can find these on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review while you're there. You can also hear the Peter King Podcast on SiriusXM Radio every Saturday morning at 7 Eastern on Mad Dog Sports Radio, SiriusXM, Channel 82. Thanks to the folks at Cadence 13 for their production work, and thanks, of course, to my sponsors this week, Wix, Robinhood, and Manscaped. Please support them the way they support this podcast. And I'll see you from the NFL meetings in Phoenix next week.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.